Welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free, the podcast for ambitious moms who are ready to ditch the mess and stress for good. Let's simplify, organize, and create a life you actually love waking up to. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey there, and welcome back to the Wanna Be Clutter Free podcast. I'm Deanna Yace, your clutter free cheerleader, and this is episode 296. Today, I am sitting down with Shira Gill, organizing expert, bestselling author, and someone whose work you've probably seen in places like Good Morning America, Oprah Daily, Architectural Digest, and the New York Times. She's written 3 books, Minimalista, Organized Living, and her latest, Lifestyled, and her newsletter, The Life Edit, reaches readers in all 50 states and in over 150 countries. In this conversation, we are talking about what minimalism actually looks like for busy families, why clutter keeps creeping back even after a big declutter, and how to deal with the emotional side of letting go, whether that's the guilt, the fear of waste, sentimental stuff, or stuff that just keeps us stuck. I talk a little bit about where I struggle with decluttering and letting go and minimalism, and Shira shares a lot of what has worked for her and her clients. So it's a really great conversation, and I think you're going to get a lot out of it. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that follow button so you don't miss an episode. And then come hang out with me on Instagram. I am at wannabeclutterfree, and I would love to chat with you. And you can find show notes for today and links for everything we discuss at wannabeclutterfree.com/296. Again, wannabeclutterfree.com/296. All right, let's dive in. Well, hey, Shira, welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks so much.
I'm so excited to chat with you. I have read all 3 of your books. I have followed you, and this is a moment where I'm like, oh, I love what I get to do because now I get to talk to you in real life.
Yay.
Virtual,
I'm delighted.
Yes. So I'm excited to have you. So for those that do not know who you are, though, can you please tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and things like
that? Sure. Yeah. So my name is Shira Gill. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I am the mother of 2. And I spent about like 10 plus years helping people edit and organize their homes in person in the Bay Area, but also all the way across the country and sometimes even out of the country. So I organized hundreds and hundreds of homes before I got my first book deal right as COVID kicked off in 2020. So my first book was called Minimalista and detailed kind of everything I had learned from the trenches of helping every type of family and individual in every type of home declutter, edit, organize, style, maintain the things that filled their homes. And since then, I guess I found out that I really love writing books. So I wrote 2 more books, and I have a 4th on the way, which wow. I haven't even talked about yet. You're maybe the first to know. So yeah, I've kind of transitioned from, you know, in-home home organizer to now I do workshops and classes and have a Substack and write books and do business coaching. So I'm kind of all over the place, but I guess all under the umbrella of helping people streamline and simplify.
Love it. This is my love language, I think, due to that idea of streamlining and being simple. And I'm excited, really excited to dive in a little bit deeper. So the 3 books you've written, Minimalista, Organized Living, and Lifestyled, is your latest. And when you look back at those books now, how has your own relationship with stuff changed since you wrote that first one?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I've been living as a minimalist as much as I can for years, but I think having now written 3 books that center around minimalism in different ways, I actually feel like I've become even more of a hardcore minimalist, like for myself and my family, where I just want to have the least items that I can own while still doing life. And so, you know, an example of that is I used to have a really extensive home office that was filled with filing cabinets and furniture and paper and office supplies. And both because I wanted to be more minimal, but mainly because my 2 daughters wrote a very compelling letter to me begging me to give up my office so they could each have their own room. My entire home office now fits in a small box. And so I basically have what you can kind of see here, a laptop, a microphone for when I do podcasts, and I often have some index cards and a pen. And so I think, you know, writing and researching these books about minimalism and organization and life simplification has just had such a profound impact on me, where I've really seen firsthand, both in my work with clients and my interviews of other organizers, and testing out all of these theories in real life, that for me, the less I have, the better I feel, the smoother my life is, the more money I have in the bank, the more freedom I have in every sense. So yeah, it's just like the joy of less, I think, has become bigger and bigger for me.
I love that. That idea of just kind of like honing in, like it felt like a target and you were kind of out. And then as you keep going in a little bit more, you're getting closer and closer to the bullseye. Does that sound about right? That's kind of the analogy that came to my head.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think because I think about minimalism as being, it's not about like restriction or deprivation or scarcity. It's really, I think of it as the opposite. It's about clarifying what is most essential. So that's kind of that bullseye you were referencing. Like, what are the things you care about the most deeply? How do you want to spend your time? And then what are the things that are just creating distraction and clutter that you can reduce or eliminate?
Yeah, so true. It's for me, it's still such a work in progress. And I find that the more I get a handle on my stuff, the more it switches to like that internal work. It really becomes more about like, yeah, what does make me tick? What do I want? What feels really important for me? So yeah, love the work you're doing. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think a lot of my listeners do kind of love this idea of minimalism, but I think they feel like it wasn't built for real life. So like you were saying there, how I do think minimalism has gotten this reputation of less for the sake of less, like getting rid of everything and like living out of a backpack and stark white walls and, you know, not really, you know, it maybe feels a little like deprivation, right? And so maybe they think it wasn't built for life with kids or work or full calendars. So how do you help people adapt minimalism so that it actually works in their life and maybe the season that they're in right now?
Yeah, I love this question because I think of minimalism as not a prescriptive formula, but really a customizable tool. And for me, my kind of journey into minimalism really began when I became pregnant with my first daughter, because there was so much pressure coming at me to buy and consume so many things. And I know so many moms feel that pressure of like, you've got to have every toy and every gadget and, you know, every new thing on the market. And I think I just at that time made a very conscious choice to do the opposite and to try to go into motherhood very intentional about what we filled our home with and really looking at what do kids need to learn and thrive and feel good. And, you know, my answer is it's almost never about the stuff and it's always about the relationships. And so in terms of the people that feel overwhelmed or intimidated by minimalism, I would start with just like this really simple prompt that I ask every client. What do you want more of in your life? And what do you want less of? I do this exercise with my family kind of at the beginning or end of every year to just sort of recalibrate and reassess. But I think starting with a mindset of what do I want to create? What do I want to move towards? Feels really abundant and exciting. And part of the reason I was really deeply motivated personally to become or live minimally was that I love travel. And I always just wanted to travel the world and be able to get on a plane. And, you know, I'm an adventure seeker. And so I knew that the more stuff I owned, the more time I would have to spend wrangling that stuff. And, you know, everything we bring in the front door becomes our responsibility. And I think most people feel like they already have too many responsibilities just in life and work and family, right? And so I think looking at our stuff through a critical eye, it's one of the few places where we really have full agency and control. And I love control. And so I'm a control enthusiast. And so in a world where we have so little control over so many things, right? Saying like, I want more of this in my life. And so I'm going to purposefully limit or be very intentional about what I allow in the front door so that it is getting me closer to this vision of what I want. And minimalism looks radically different for everybody. And so I would say probably most of the clients that work with me both don't consider themselves minimalists and don't even aspire to be minimalists. And mm-hmm. so they just use my framework to get more intentional about what they keep, what they buy, what they bring in the front door, what they invest in, so that they feel like everything they own, everything that kind of surrounds them has a reason for being there. It's not just like, well, this is random or someone gave it to me or I feel bad or guilty getting rid of it. But it's like, this is actually making my life better.
Yeah. Oh, what you said there about the responsibility, I think is really going to hit home because I've talked about things as tools, right? So it's stuff that you can use that serves a purpose for you. That distinction of everything you bring in your door becomes your responsibility and you are going to be responsible for it. And that means you have to maintain it. You have to clean it. You have to do something with it. Even if it's you just use it and then it goes, right? You're still responsible for it. So if you can even stop that coming in, you're right. We all feel like we're too responsible for too much on a daily basis. You know, especially you become a parent and now you're like, oh my gosh, I have to keep a human alive. And that's a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely. I mean, I think every time, because I'm a normal human who wants to buy things and I do buy things and I love fashion and art and interiors. I mean, that's a big part of my business and brand. So every time I feel the itch to buy something, I ask myself, where will I put this in my home? And that has been such a helpful tool for me because if I can't imagine where it would go, then I know it's just going to become stressful and it's going to feel like clutter. Yeah. But if it's like, oh, well, we have a big blank space on our wall and we need art or we want more color, we've been thinking about this, then it feels like a good intentional purchase. But I think so much of our purchasing is unconscious or kind of a buffer or a numbing out of like, things feel hard, I want a little treat, or I'm feeling insecure, I want a little boost. And of course, I'm guilty of all of those things. So it's, you know, we're all a work in progress here. But I think for me, being really intentional about what I'm spending money on and making sure it aligns with my bigger goals and values and the things I want instead of just that like panic purchase.
Yeah. I was just reminded, as you said, work in progress. So one of my favorite, I love my Peloton bike. And one of my favorite instructors, actually, she does more strength training, is Jess Sims. And she says, breathe in as the work of art you are and breathe out as the masterpiece you are at the exact same time. And I love that idea because I have struggled a lot with that, with feeling like I need to use everything up. I need to make sure that I have stewarded my stuff so well that I'm not buying new things just for the sake of buying new things. I'm buying new things because I absolutely need that new thing, right? My shirt is so worn out that I need to replace it with a different shirt, or I don't know, just that those kinds of things have come up a lot in my life. And so how do you, this is just a totally off topic subject. This thought just came to mind. How do you help people balance that idea of, I want to be, you know, I struggle with the guilt of throwing things out environmentally and, you know, letting go of something just because my taste has changed that feels so frivolous sometimes versus you're capable and you deserve nice things as well.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I love practicing the fewer better ethos. And I feel like I used to always buy like cheap sweatpants. And I just had like really not cute sweatpants but so many pairs of them. And then I remember, I mean, this was a long time ago. This was in my 20s and I was on a limited budget. And I remember just having this kind of epiphany of like, well, if I just invested in one pair, of like sweatpants that I loved. I would rather have that one pair than these 10 kind of mediocre pairs that I don't feel great about. So that's one thing, right? Is just like that fewer better, like when you're going to invest in something, make sure it really does feel like the right thing, and not the like I'm settling for second best thing. And I mean, I often will buy like beautiful designer clothes gently used from secondhand websites for like 70% off. So this isn't saying you have to go spend tons and tons of money, but it's just saying like slow your roll when it comes to the purchasing. And then on the other end with the decluttering, I think what really helps me is thinking, could this help somebody else more than it's helping me? And so, you know, to speak to the sustainability bit, I mean, I'm really dedicated to disposing of things in the most sustainable way possible and keeping them out of the landfill. And the number one thing you can do to improve your environmental footprint is simply to buy less and use what you have. But I think you don't want to get so, you know, insane about it that you're like, well, I cannot let go of this Q-tip, you know, like you want to yes. still have realistic standards. And I think sometimes like we do make purchasing mistakes, and instead of beating yourself up or being like, well, now I have to keep it and I have to punish myself because I made this mistake, I find it very liberating to just say, you know what, I bought this thing, I'm not really wearing it or using it, who might really enjoy it? And sometimes like I have two teenage daughters, so that's been very helpful for me in terms of like not feeling wasteful, is like instead of buying my teenage daughters a new pair of jeans, I give them a pair of jeans that I'm not thrilled with, but I already spent money on, or a friend or a neighbor or a listserv. You know, there's so many places.
We live in San Diego and we do not have air conditioning. So come summer, grilling outside isn't just preferred, it is absolutely required. I will not add one more degree of heat to this house if I can help it. And grilling nights work best when quality protein is already in the freezer, ready to go. The nights it's not, well, that's when dinner becomes a chaotic scramble. So I just ordered from Omaha Steaks, and I went straight for the burger perfection flight because my husband and daughter, well, they have declared themselves official beef burger connoisseurs, and we're doing a family taste test. 20 pure ground beef burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak, filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Each burger is ground from a single cut, not blended. It's steakhouse quality without the steakhouse price. Omaha Steaks has spent over 100 years perfecting this. Every cut of meat arrives vacuum sealed, flash frozen, and ready to go the moment you need it. No scrambling, no guessing. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
But I think it is looking at, if this item really isn't serving me anymore, what is the easiest and most sustainable way I can pass it along?
Yeah, love that. And I love that you used such a ridiculous example like the Q-tip, because what it does is it totally diffuses that situation, right? It brings it down to, well, yeah, of course I wouldn't hold on to a Q-tip, right? Because why? Well, it's inexpensive. It gets cuts through all that guilt, right? It cuts through all of these limiting beliefs that we might have that, you know, it was expensive or someone gave it to me or, you know, yeah, I feel bad disposing of it, even though if it's a used Q-tip, no one like the, ew, like,
yeah, nobody wants that.
No,
but no one. I mean, I have had clients like debating an old rubber band with me because they're like, I could use this rubber band one day, you know, and people really get stuck in their heads about it, especially those who, you know, want to be more sustainable about their things. And I think, you know, you have to have some guardrails in place where you don't just spin in circles, and you can make a decision and feel good about it and know that moving forward, the most sustainable thing you can do is just buy less. And if you don't use rubber bands, okay, great. Nobody died because I didn't use this rubber band. I'm going to give it to my kid's school and I'm going to move forward not buying rubber bands in the future.
Yeah. Yes. That awareness piece of like, okay, what am I letting go of and why, you know, just knowing that I don't need to buy those again in the future, right? Yes. I love the idea of like slowing, like you said, slow your roll, watch what's coming in. And as you're letting go of things, make a mental note, put a note in your notes app, you know, somewhere where you're going to remember like, oh, this is my do not buy these things list, because I've got so much going on in my life. That's just going to be a really good thing I'm going to do going forward. Like, I've got so much going on. I don't remember what I'm not supposed to buy. I don't remember what I'm supposed to buy for dinner next week at the grocery store if I don't make a list. So why am I going to remember 2 years down the road when I see a cute ball of rubber bands that I'm not supposed to buy them because I don't use them? So I know, ridiculous examples, but hopefully people are getting it.
I hope so. Yeah. A do not buy list is a great tool, like reminding yourself of things that you typically buy or overbuy that you don't need, or places you maybe don't want to support with your dollar. I mean, I always say we vote with our spending. So for me, I've been trying really hard to stop, you know, ordering online from the big, big box stores and going and shopping locally from my mom and pop stores that I don't want to go out of business. And that actually has helped a lot because the online one-click purchasing makes it so easy. There's just no friction anymore to buying. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had a friend tell me the other day, I complimented her dress and she goes, Amazon, you know, that big, big A box store, I shouldn't say who it is. And she's like, yeah, this way, you know, it was so inexpensive. I can just wear it a couple times and then I don't have to worry, like if it falls apart, whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I was so pained. I was so pained.
Yeah, I know. The disposable culture is really, it's really tricky. It's so easy to buy things without really thinking about the greater ramifications of where is that thing going to end up when I'm done with it. I heard about, I'm blanking on who founded this movement, but the 30 wears movement that when you buy a new item of apparel, you kind of ask yourself, will I wear this at least 30 times? And if the answer is no, like this is really going to be a one and done, then maybe you rethink that purchase. Mm-hmm. That's been helpful to me because, you know, those fun, flashy trends come and you're like, ooh, shiny object. But thinking, am I going to get 30 wears out of this, which really in the scheme of things is not that much. I think often for me, the answer is probably not.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point. Yeah. I love that. And we'll figure out who did start that movement. We'll try to put it in the show notes. So we give credit where credit's due because I don't know who started that either. But I love that for sure. Okay, so let's talk about people who feel overwhelmed, right? What do you think is the biggest misconception when it comes to getting organized? And what does organized really mean? Because I think we've all got a lot going on. And adding one more thing to our plate feels like, okay, tell me why I should do this.
Yes. Okay. So, well, why you should do it in the first place is organizing takes time, but it makes time is what I like to say, right? So it's similar to planning. Like, you don't want to sit down on a Sunday night and plan your whole week, but when you do, your week runs a lot smoother and you end up saving a lot of time and often money and energy and all the things. So I think of organization like minimalism as a tool. It's a tool that we use to make our lives better. And so organizing for the sake of organizing, which I think got really big, you know, in the past decade or so, where it was like, you know, to show off to your friends or the rainbow color-coded closet or the, you know, Kardashian pantry. Those are all fun and fine. But I think the real reason to get organized is to make your life better, to add value to your life, right? And so I think of organization, my definition of organization is as simple as putting similar things together and every group of items has an assigned place. So if we think about like a grocery store that you walk into, it's really easy to find the apples because you know they're going to be in the produce section. It's really easy to find the milk because it's going to be in the dairy section. And we just forget to do this in our own homes. I find often people are very organized at work and in their work life, but not at home. I think it can really easily get neglected because you're not getting paid to do it, right? It's not a job. You have to find the time to do it. But what I found is if you think about your home like a preschool classroom or like a grocery store, and you think, what are my big broad categories? And do I have a place for each big broad category in my home that's easy and intuitive? That's really the whole game of it. And I think the big mistake people make is thinking they have to do it all at once. So thinking they have to like take their whole house by storm and be an organized person tomorrow, or over-organizing, I actually see as a big problem is getting so meticulous about your organization that it's actually not sustainable or user-friendly. So like the example I would give is a filing system. Like if I had a filing system that was alphabetized, I'm probably not going to use it because I don't enjoy filing as it is. So my filing system literally is like five files, and it's like home, work, car, kids. And so when I have something that I do need to keep, I can plop it in. It takes 1 second. There's no overthinking. And so for me, that's a sustainable system. The way that I think about systems is you want them to pass the five-year-old test. So if you're setting up a system that's too complicated for a five-year-old, you might want to rethink. And every system, I'm just looking around my home right now, like every system we have, I actually think a two-year-old could adhere to our systems because they're mainly things like a large basket where everybody drops mail, right? Or like a series of hooks when you walk in the door that is where coats go. And I think one of the other common mistakes people make is just having so many different systems for similar items. So I always like to group like all of my paperwork. Anything that needs my attention goes in my inbox. And for me, whether that's home or kid or work or bills or events, it's something that requires my attention. So I'm dumping it in one place. And I think often what I see when I'm helping people with their homes is they have maybe a work inbox, a place for mail, a place for kids stuff, a place for filing, a big pile of random stuff on their counter. And it all just starts feeling so overwhelming. So one of my top tips is just if you have a category of stuff that feels like it's everywhere, just centralize it.
Yeah, well, that's so smart. I love that idea about that a five-year-old can do it, right?
Yes.
Because, and we've heard this in business, like right to fifth grade level, right? The easier you can make something, the more likely you are to stick with it. So yeah, that's so brilliant because we do think that we has to be this perfect Pinterest worthy, you know, system or, you know, do we just think we're smarter? Like, do we just feel like we're smarter when we put these like more sophisticated things together? Does that, I don't get it. Why do we do that to ourselves?
I know. I think it's just a lot of shoulds. I think it's people think like this is the right way. But, you know, I am a rule breaker. I think like you got to make your own way. And for, I mean, we're in a pretty small home. I'm in a 1200 square foot bungalow. It was built in 1916. We've literally no storage. Like there's no basement, no garage, no entry closet. So we are working with a challenging situation for, you know, two adults, two teenagers, and a dog. And we're a very busy household. And so for me, simplifying those systems means everyone's going to follow them. It's going to be easy. We have teenagers in and out of our house all day. And I want them to be able to dump things in the right place with as little friction as possible, because then I know they'll actually do it.
Yeah, they'll follow through. That makes sense. Yeah. If you ask them to do a five-step plan when they walk through that door, they're not going to do it.
No.
Yeah.
There's no way.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, one of the systems I remember reading about that you do is that you wear a white shirt every day, right? So
that's, and here I am.
Do I have that right?
Yes. So I've had a uniform for, it's been almost a decade.
Yeah.
And I may change it. Who knows? But it's been working very well, right? Like it's basically I wear some form of like white blouse or white t-shirt with jeans and mainly sneakers. I'm a pretty casual lady and my life is pretty casual. I'm writing or I'm on Zooms and nobody can see me from, you know, the bottom down anyway. But yeah, I've really, really simplified my wardrobe. And it's funny because people think I'm super minimal, but my brother is actually even more minimal than me, which is so odd. I don't know how we both came to this, but he wears a black t-shirt and black jeans like every single day of the week and has done it for much longer than I have. And he travels the world. He'll go to fancy restaurants. He'll work. He'll, I mean, everything under the sun he can do in this uniform. So he's the one who kind of inspired me because I felt like I saw a lot of examples of men having a uniform.
Yep.
Not a lot of examples of women. And so I just thought, well, when I talked to my brother about it, it was clear that this was like a huge life hack. Like it eliminated decision fatigue every morning. It was almost like monastic. He would just wake up and put on his uniform. So I got jealous and I wanted the same thing for me. And so, you know, it took some trial and error of like, is it going to be a dress? Is it going to be a this? And I ended up just realizing I really personally feel the most comfortable in jeans. I'm a jeans person, but I do like to elevate a little bit. And so the white blouse jean combo just feels like me and works for almost everything I do.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's fantastic. Yeah, I think if you find something that works for you, absolutely stick with it. And I think it's just a great example of these systems that we can put in our place in our lives that make things so much easier. And you don't have to think about it now when you get up, which is not the case for most people.
Yeah, we still have to think about. And I didn't want to wake up and try on five outfits, you know?
Right.
I think the way my closet is set up, I have tops and I have bottoms. So I just pick one and one. And I have a million different combinations, but they're all kind of the same. So it's really, for me, been a huge life simplifier. And I think finding something that feels like the best version of you. So that did take me some time and some trial and error of, you know, trying things on, going to department stores and trying on 20 pairs of jeans. And what are the ones that I like for me and my body? That takes some time. But again, it's kind of that like initial investment of time, just like with organizing or decluttering, to then on the flip side, have so much more time and energy and money and benefit.
Yeah. All right. So for people that say, look, I don't even have time to get organized, what's the first gentle reframe that you offer that helps them feel less defeated and more capable and like, no, okay, I actually should invest in this for myself?
So I came up with this concept called the 15-minute win. Many, many years ago when I was with a client who was so overwhelmed and she just felt like her house was teeming with clutter and she didn't know where to begin and anything felt like it wasn't going to make a dent. And I just kind of instinctively had this idea like, let's gamify it so it's a little bit more fun and make it micro because it felt so overwhelming. And so I just said, let's set a timer for 15 minutes and open your junk drawer and see if we can just take everything out, wipe it down, and just put back the things you want to keep. And we did it in 7 minutes, I remember very clearly, because she said something to the effect of, I've been staring at this drawer for over a decade. It's been stressing me out. And we just transformed it in 7 minutes. And so it was really powerful for both of us because I think I had this realization like we get so overwhelmed and so in our heads that it stalls us from taking any action. But if we can just challenge ourselves to 15 minutes, and I use this hack for other things that overwhelm me because decluttering is easy for me, but things like doing my taxes are horrifying and paralyzing. And so I will say to myself, Shira, you just need to set a timer for 15 minutes, see what you can do in terms of organizing your tax paperwork and prep. And what I find is once you get over that initial hurdle, it is so motivating and empowering to see yourself taking action and making progress that often people don't want to stop at that 15-minute mark. They're like, I'm on fire. Let's do the next drawer. But even if you don't, you've had one victory. And so I think we really vastly overestimate how long we need to organize. And often it's like I'm just going to clean out my wallet today. That's enough. And then I'm going to have a cleaned out, tidy wallet that will kind of make me happy every day. So it's looking for those little micro projects that you can do in 15 minutes or less, and trusting that if you get in the habit of doing those, there's going to be this compounded effect where your home really starts shape shifting.
Yeah, you're building on top of the others, right? And especially if you pair it with what you said earlier about stopping the inflow, you really are able to see progress even in these very short amounts of time, because you're not bringing more in, you've made progress, and now tomorrow you make more progress. And if you start somewhere, especially where it's going to make an impact on your day, then you're going to feel that tomorrow when you start to go through your day and you're like, oh, wow, I did that. You prove to yourself that you can do it. Yeah.
100%. And I would say even for the people who feel like they're so underwater right now that they can't find 15 minutes, and we've all had seasons like that, I would say the one thing that you can do is just stop buying new things. And so you can just curb the spending so that you don't feel like you're getting more and more and more volume to manage. Because most people, in my experience, have a volume problem much more than an organizing problem. So if you just focus on limiting the volume of what comes in, you will start to feel some relief right away.
Yeah, for sure. I know you did Ashley Piper's No New Things Challenge, right?
Yes, I love Ashley. Yeah.
I want to have her on the show so bad. I loved it. Her new book was so good. Yes. And it is all about that. Like, just if you can stop, just take a pause. Not saying you can never buy anything new, but just that pause. So I know I read, I read your summary on that. I just found it was very fascinating. Yeah, so I love it.
Yes, yeah, I usually try to do it every year. I try to do a No New Things Challenge for 1 month and just kind of a reset, like a recalibration of noticing what I want to buy, my shopping triggers, paying attention to when I feel that itch to consume. It's really illuminating.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. And I do think, I'm on the precipice of doing one myself now that I'm back into... I mean, we're recording this at the end of January, and I finally feel like we're not traveling to visit family. We're like back in school mode. So I'm just like, okay, I can breathe. So yes, I'm definitely going to be doing one myself. Yeah.
Oh, good. I can't wait to hear about it. I'm excited. So fun. Yeah, yeah. It's a good challenge.
Very cool. All right. And then let's talk about, when people reclutter, in the beginning of my journey, I did this to myself as well, because I know so many people declutter and then 6 months later, they feel like they're right back into it, right back where they started. We had traveled. So speaking of adventure, I'm also a huge adventure junkie, travel junkie. We had sold pretty much everything we owned when our daughter was one and did 6 months in Europe, came back, recluttered a house. Because everyone was so nice and we, you know, they all wanted to help us refurnish this house that we didn't have anything in. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh gosh, what happened? So what would you say if someone feels like, okay, I did it and now it doesn't feel like it's stuck? So from your perspective, what's usually missing when that clutter keeps creeping back in?
Yeah, I think it's the maintenance piece, right? Mm. So, I'm as minimal as I can be, but I have to do maintenance because life is not static. People give us gifts. My children need new things. You know, I'll see something that I like and bring it into the house. Like, there is no done when it comes to decluttering and organizing. It is not a finite process. It's an ongoing process. And so I think, for me and my family, we've kind of created these maintenance moments throughout the year where it's like before someone's birthday, when my kids were little, we would do a clean out before they got the gifts coming in. So there was kind of equilibrium restored, or before the school year starts in the fall, when my kids are like, we need new this and that and the other, we go through and we're like, well, what is the old stuff we can get rid of or repurpose or reuse? So I think looking for like seasonal moments, you know, the holidays are another great time to kind of do like a pantry clean out, a toy clean out, like all of those things that tend to overflow. And I think it's also a greater mindset shift of being the gatekeeper of your home and really having that awareness of anything I bring through that front door is now my responsibility, not only to manage now, but to manage when I eventually want to get rid of it or donate it or dispose of it or recycle it. So that's the biggest thing, is just the being like the bouncer at the front door that's like, am I going to let you in? Whoa. And because things are always inevitably going to come in, like I have kids that bring home art and homework and we have mail and bills, things are always going to be flowing in. So I think it's having those regular rituals. Another one for us is we just dump everything all week into this big basket, whether it's like bills or invites or forms we need to sign. And then on Sunday, we have a really brief, usually 15-minute family meeting where it's like we dump the basket out, we go through, my husband and I divide and conquer the bills, the invitations, the school forms, and then it's kind of reset for the week. And I think, you know, that's like a 15-minute win every Sunday that prevents a mountain of very overwhelming paper clutter that would accumulate even in just a few weeks or a few months. So I think it's looking at where are those kind of key clutter culprits in your home? Like, what are the things that tend to just always become too much to manage? And how can you create like a very simple automated system, whether it's reviewing, you know, once a week or decluttering every season. But I do think we've got to build in those maintenance moments, or it is pretty inevitable that we'll have the clutter come back.
I think that that makes perfect sense. And I love that you kind of build in those moments for kind of taking a look at it. And I love that everyone sits down and works through that incoming, you know, pile, that inbox, because it doesn't just fall on your shoulders. It is a family responsibility. So I love that you guys divide that up.
Yes, they don't enjoy it. and I do often have to involve treats.
I don't enjoy it. So why should I have to do it all on my own? I don't enjoy it either. That doesn't mean I don't have to.
100%. But I do find treats and rewards are very helpful. Even like for you as an individual, like if I do something overwhelming, I will like go get an ice cream cone or treat myself to something fun. And I think the same with like wrangling my kids and my husband for a family meeting. It's like, we're going to do this. We'll knock it out in 15 minutes and then we'll go see a movie, or we'll have, you know, fun family time, or something nice will follow.
Yeah, keeping it short with like an absolute deadline of like, look, this isn't going to be a whole day runaway affair where we're going to do all of it. It's just quick and short, and let's just do it together so it's done fast.
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. So another thing that I think holds people back when it comes to their stuff is the emotional side of their stuff, whether that's guilt for wanting to let go of something, fear of waste, maybe they're sentimental items, they've spent a lot of money on it. I see that one all the time. So is there a question that you personally ask yourself when you're unsure of whether to keep something? And do you have any processes for gently letting go?
Yeah, absolutely. And I had to go through this process hardcore when I lost my dad about 12 years ago, and, you know, inherited an entire house full of stuff and live in a very small house with almost no storage, as I mentioned. And so what helped me the most was some of the questions were like, what is truly irreplaceable? So like with my dad's stuff, you know, there were coffee mugs that were just coffee mugs. But then there were like letters he had written in the 60s from the Peace Corps in Africa. And so that was like, oh, this is truly irreplaceable, right? You can't buy this at a store. So for me, that distinction was very helpful and helped me to say like, this is just stuff, right? It's like books, magazines, furniture. I can donate or sell that pretty easily. And then I was left with the things that felt much more personal. And there were still more than I could store in my house. And so for me, having a physical boundary was very, very helpful. So we kind of looked at our tiny little basement and we said, like, we have room for roughly like 8 banker boxes. And so that's the limit. And so I was able to kind of pluck out like the photos and the letters and the things that mattered most to me and fill those boxes. And then everything else I offered to friends, family members, luckily many of whom were eager to take those things. So I think, you know, it's starting with the question of like, what is truly irreplaceable? What is valuable to me? What matters most? I think, you know, even though I have 8 banker boxes full of my dad's stuff, I only have like a few things that feel truly, truly like the most precious. And so for those things, I have taken them out of the basement once I was ready and framed them. So I have like his macaroni and cheese recipe that he made, you know, throughout my childhood that is framed and up and everybody sees it and asks about it. And, you know, there's a handful of items like that. So I think it's also what I have learned is in some sense, the less you keep, the more valuable it feels. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think I had to, we live in California and there's often fires and earthquakes and evacuations. And so we really had to ask ourselves those questions of like, what would we take in a fire? Mm-hmm. And for me, it really helped me to identify those like most precious things. So the other thing I might offer people is like the shoebox test of like, if you could only grab a shoebox, like what are the things that would make the cut? Mm. And having both that physical boundary and kind of the perceived urgency of like, if it came down to it, what would I grab? What are those things that I intuitively feel like mean so much to me?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, sorry for your loss. I know that's very difficult to go through. We lost my father-in-law just about the same time, maybe a little bit longer. But yeah, it's not something that you can really prepare for. And, you know, you wouldn't ever wish anyone to have to go through that. But there is that silver lining of finding those little precious moments. And then, yeah, getting to cherish those. Yeah, for sure. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the one other thing I'll offer is just I've had many clients who end up inheriting like entire collections that they really don't have the storage space. So one other thing I'll offer is keeping one token from a collection. Like you could keep one teacup and that would feel so special and valuable, but you don't have to have 200 teacups.
Yeah. And I have an example of that right behind me. This vase that's up on the wall is a collection from my grandfather. I didn't inherit the entire collection. We actually took the collection and divided it amongst the family. So everybody got to choose one piece, which was really special. And so that just feels one, a connection to my grandfather and a connection to my greater family at large, which is really nice as well. So yeah, it works really well. Highly recommend that way to go.
Love it. Yes.
An example right here. Yeah, perfect.
We got it.
And then this question is a little out there, and I don't know that I've ever really heard too many people ask about it. You've been talking about minimalism for so long, and I hear sometimes people say, you can be a minimalist because it's an act of privilege, right? You have so much that you can replace anything you want. You don't have to live in a world of scarcity. I hear that end of the spectrum. I also hear the other end of the spectrum of, I don't have anything, so I'm forced to be a minimalist. It's not a choice for me. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I both speak from a middle ground in the middle. But what do you say to people that do see both sides of that spectrum or think it's only for the fringes there?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, like minimalism is a choice of privilege, whereas poverty is a very different animal. And I would never want to lump the two of them in the same category. But I think for me, it's been interesting because I've made the decision, I guess, to maintain a minimalist lifestyle, whether I was like, you know, sleeping on a mattress in college and had no budget, or, you know, as my career has expanded and my budget has increased, I think it's actually like nailed down even more so for me that regardless of how much money is in my bank account, it is a lifestyle that for me adds so much benefit. And so it's become a really consistent part of my life, regardless of the other factors that have shifted. And I think it's interesting because I also, you know, I've had the privilege of working with everyone from like students and teachers and people living on a very tight budget to actual billionaires who own, you know, a dozen homes all over the world. And I think what I've found is that most people really do want the same thing, which is they want to have a meaningful life that feels fulfilling. They want to have friendships and relationships that matter, work that feels purposeful and important. And the stuff generally provides more stress and more harm than good, even at that top tier level of the millionaires and billionaires that I have helped to organize also feel the cost of clutter in their own lives and want to live more simply. And so I think that's really what it comes down to is like when you strip it all away at the end of the day, like what are the things that matter most to people, to human beings? I don't know anybody among us who would say the stuff is what matters, right? It's yeah. like the people, the relationships, the work, the contribution, the community. And so I think that's kind of universally what most people are after. And so in an interesting way, whether I'm working with someone of great, great privilege or not, the process is the same, the questions are the same, and the goal is the same.
Hmm. I love that. Wow. It's so interesting, though, that we are sold the opposite, right? We all want this thing, and yet it doesn't come down to the stuff. And yet that is what we are sold every day, day in, day out. Buy this, you'll be happier. Get all this stuff. Look at all the stuff all these people have. Oh, I'm not enough because I don't measure up and I can't show off the stuff I have. So I find that so fascinating.
Yeah. I can tell you from having this experience of, you know, I've worked with celebrities and billionaires and tech entrepreneurs, and when it all comes down to it, everybody wants the same thing for their life. And the stuff isn't it. It's never, it's like such an arrival fallacy that you're going to get like the fancy car and the fancy home and the fancy bag and finally feel happy. I can tell you that that is not the case.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Now we know. Even though we get that little bit of like, oh, but wouldn't I feel good in the end? It's not worth it. Go back to the less, but, you know, better if you're needing to kind of get through that. We talked about that. My idea of like, but sometimes I really struggle with getting rid of things or having the right amount of stuff or not having too much stuff and just feeling not good about it. Just come back to that, knowing that the stuff at the end of the day, it's just stuff.
Just stuff. It's true. And it is a privilege to own stuff. I think it's really the journey is like figuring out the right amount for you that is in service of the life that you want to lead and letting go of the rest in a way that feels good to you and sustainable and as purposeful as possible.
Fantastic. All right, Shira. Well, tell people where they can find you. How are we going to find out about your fourth book? Pick up the third book, which is Lifestyled, which is the latest one that I just read. And then I'll have to have you on when the fourth one comes out.
Love that. Yes. So you can find me. My website is just my name, shiragill.com. I have a completely paywall-free Substack called The Life Edit that has readers from 150 countries who are all wanting to do more with less. So it's a really fun, inspiring community. And you can find me on Instagram at shiragill.
Love it. All right. We'll have links in the show notes too. So if you're out driving or whatever, just click on through, make it easy for yourself. And then my favorite way to end every episode is with three rapid fire questions. So the first one is, what does clutter-free mean to you?
Ooh, I would say clutter-free to me means removing distraction and having the space and clarity to focus on what matters most to you.
That's a good one. Number two, what is making you happy right now or in this season of your life?
I am loving time with teenagers. So I have two teenage daughters and they are just such a joy for me and their friends are a joy. Yeah, I think teenagers get a bad rap, much like minimalism. And I am here to say teenagers can really be the most fun.
Oh, that is such good news. I'm not too far off from that date with my own daughter. So I love to hear anytime I hear that teenagers are not as
Yes,
troublesome. Oh, I
they're
love it.
delightful. They're so smart and fun, and their opinions are so fascinating. So, yeah, I'm just soaking it up.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm excited about it then. And then number three, what's one small step you recommend listeners take today?
Oh, I would love to challenge your listeners to a 15-minute win. So pick one thing that feels overwhelming in your home or your life or your work, anything, and just set a timer for 15 minutes and see what you can do.
Love it. That's a great challenge. All right. I challenge all of you listening. Go do that today and then report back. Let us know how it goes. Yeah.
I would love
Awesome.
that.
Thank you, Shira. This has been fantastic.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. I loved that conversation. And the thing that stuck with me the most is that is Shira's point about how clutter comes back when we haven't addressed the root cause. And those are the habits and the systems that are underneath and underlying why we keep bringing things back into our home. It's not about willpower. It's about setting yourself up so that the path of least resistance actually keeps things tidy. And I loved how you really got to make things super simple. So any like a 2 to 5 year old could do the systems because when we are tired, it's kind of what we revert back to. So I love that she brought that forward for us just to say like, yeah, you know what? It's okay. It's all right if we keep things really simple. They don't have to be sophisticated. But I would love to know what landed for you. So please come join me on Instagram and let me know. I am at Wannabe Clutter Free on the channel. So at Wannabe Clutter Free, and I would love to have a conversation with you. And if this episode helped you, would you take 30 seconds, please, and just leave a review? It really does help other families find the show. And you can also comment on Spotify so we can have a conversation over there too, if you'd like, if you don't want to be on Instagram. All right. Thank you so much to Shira for being here. You can find all of the links for her books and her newsletter in the show notes at wannabeclutterfree.com/296. Again, that's wannabeclutterfree.com/296. And next week, I am going to be joined by Dr. Angela Casey, and we are going to be talking about simplifying our skincare. She's created a skincare line for teens. She's a board-certified dermatologist. She's very credentialed, and we have a really great conversation about what do we actually need to be, putting on our skin? What does skincare actually mean? And how can we keep it simple so that it works for everybody in our families? And whether that's our teens that are really getting into makeup and into skincare, and then products that we would feel comfortable with them wearing. It's a great conversation. You're going to love it. And it really hits home with someone who has a tween at home who's just on the precipice of this. I really enjoyed getting to talk with her and get the real information. And that's what I'm here for you. So join us next week for that. And hey, if you're feeling inspired, try this. Pick one drawer today, just one. Give yourself 15 minutes, do that 15-minute win, and see how it feels to finish something small. That momentum is real. Remember, keep it simple. Let go of these big systems that we feel like we have to do everything right. You can do things small, and the small things really do add up. I believe in you. I know you can do anything you put your mind to. I'm Deanna Yates, and you've been listening to Wannabe Clutter Free. I'll see you next week. Cheers.